Welcome to another edition of the PapaCast. So glad you can join us. And we're here on Radio Row, Super Bowl 50, San Francisco. It doesn't get any better than this. There have been 49 previous Super Bowls, and the guy I'm sitting next to was victorious in two of those previous 49. David Deal, who won a Super Bowl with the Giants in Super Bowl 42 and Super Bowl 46, joins us here on the PapaCast. You having fun out here?
I'm having an excellent time, and as weird as it sounds, you just gave me goosebumps to think about having two Super Bowl rings on my hand right now and to be part of only 49 teams currently and, as of Sunday, 50 teams in the NFL total. To be able to have the opportunity, number one, to get to the Super Bowl, but number two, to be able to win two Super Bowls, I mean, it's still surreal to me because after an 11-year career, you still have those feelings. You were a professional, but you were a fan of this football game long before you were a player. So to be a part of this now after playing and being and winning two Super Bowls and being a part of the media here, it's excellent because it gives you a completely different perspective of how much takes place going into Sunday's Super Bowl game.
I want to go to two different places with you, and we're going to start with David Deal as a kid growing up in Illinois. You mentioned growing up with the Super Bowl. When you think about a Super Bowl memory as a kid, what's one of the first things that jumps to your mind?
1985 Chicago Bears. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, and I was a Bears fan until I was drafted by the New York Giants in 2003. And for me, I just remember celebrating with my family because we had a big Super Bowl party, celebrating with my family, and just feeling the energy and the pride around Chicago of having a championship team. I remember them going down Michigan Avenue on the big buses and seeing the punky QB, Jim McMahon, and Sweetness hanging out of the buses and on top of the buses. And as a kid, my whole dream in life was to be able to hold that Lombardi trophy at one point. Granted, did I ever think it was going to be at a left tackle when I was a kid? No, I didn't. Because I can remember one of the Super Bowls, you know, playing out on the street with my friends, scoring the game-winning touchdown and walking back to my house, and I see my two brothers and my dad in the picture window looking out, laughing at me. And I come in, and I'm upset. I just scored the game-winning touchdown. I'm like, what are you guys laughing about? They're like, David, just throw the football down now. You are never going to hold that in your life in a professional football game. So it was kind of a reality check. But, I mean, like I said, to be able to be a part of the history of the NFL and to win two Super Bowl championships as a New York Giant, I mean, that's a dream come true.
Now as a player, Super Bowl 42, undefeated Patriots, Super Bowl 46, Patriots again.
But you were a part of that streak, Bob Papa. We can't leave out that story.
All right, well, let's explain to the listeners of the PapaCast why, for some bizarre reason, you're trying to give me some credit for Super Bowl 42.
It's not a bizarre reason, Papa. Well, you know, some people say that they're semi-stitious. You know me, I'm very superstitious. I'm a routine person, the same thing, the same music, the same playlist before going out, tape time before a game, stretch routine, all that stuff. So in 2007, for everybody listening, we were a part of the first international series playing up against the Miami Dolphins in London. We get to London, we drop off our bags, we have our meeting, go down to the buses for our first trip to Chelsea to practice. And who do I sit next to on the bus? That would be the Mr. Bob Papa. Bob and I are sitting there discussing sports, looking out the window, just talking. So we did it the first day.
And it was a long ride.
It was a 45-minute trip. Did it the first day, and we did it that entire trip. Go, we win the game, we play the Dolphins, we travel back. For that rest of the season, who did I sit next to on the bus heading to games on the road? The one and only Mr. Bob Papa, and we rolled right through 11 straight road wins to the Super Bowl and winning and becoming Super Bowl 42 champs.
That was a lot of fun, hanging with you, talking with you, getting to know you. A little tough for me because you took up a lot of room. You know, especially on the buses in London, the seats were very narrow.
But that's why I picked you. You're a smaller guy. I need the space. You're not going to go sit next to Kareem McKenzie. I'm going to go pick a guy who I can get some room and spread out the elbows with. So I definitely picked you.
Glad I could help. So now, that's a memory from 2007. When you think about the Super Bowl specifically, and it doesn't have to be a play, it doesn't have to be anything. It could be something that's very personal. But is there a burning image for you when you think about your Super Bowl wins? Is there one that stands out, maybe even a little more separate than any of the other moments?
Well, in Super Bowl 42, for me, the moment that really struck me was, you know, being with my family after the game. It was one thing to celebrate with my teammates and my coaches, but then to be able to grab my family out of the stands and to see, you know, my brother smiling and so proud and my mom crying, you realize that when you win the Super Bowl, it's not just about you. It's not just about the New York Giants and your teammates. It's about family. It made me think at that point, number one, how blessed I was to have a unbelievable father to teach me discipline, competing, always doing your best, always punching in the clock day in and day out. And, you know, to say a prayer after that game for him after we won, it meant a lot to me after my father passing in 03. And then to look at my mom and to give her a big hug and to hug my brothers and to tell them all thank you, because I wouldn't have been on that platform, on that stage, playing in the Super Bowl if it wasn't for the sacrifices my parents made or the way my brothers pushed me to be my best. And that's what sticks out to me most in Super Bowl 42.
46, you're not really the underdog in that one. Was it a different kind of pressure? Because a lot of people picked the Giants to win that game, and you guys might have been the better team. I mean, we know what happened in 42. They're undefeated. It's a big upset. Not that you guys didn't believe it could happen. But was 46 a different kind of pressure?
It definitely was. It was definitely a different kind of pressure, considering that in 42, the Patriots were the undefeated football team in the NFL and were looking to break the Miami Dolphins streak. And then to think about in 46, when throughout basically that entire season, that was the only time we were really favored in a football game. And it was the biggest game that you could be favored for. So it was a little bit different. But I think for us, I think the fact that we had veterans like myself, Eli Manning, Justin Tuck, Chris Snee, we were able to preach to the younger players on our team that this is a business trip. It's great to be a part of the Super Bowl, all the parties, all the festivities. We're not telling you not to embrace what it is, but Eli talking about Peyton being on the other side, losing a Super Bowl. I'll never forget in 2007, Michael Strahan standing in front of us as a team. And the minute he started talking about losing the Super Bowl in 2000, his body language, his face, his words, 7 years later, he still did not get over that loss, because you never know if you're going to get that opportunity again. So 46 was, yeah, there was a little bit more pressure, but I feel as a team we were a lot more prepared due to the fact that we played and won 3 years earlier.
You know, athletes always talk about, and coaches especially, they talk a lot about the ones that get away. You listen to golfers, and they could win a couple of major championships, but they can recount shot for shot the ones that they could have won and they didn't. Have you ever been able to reconcile 2008? Because in 2007, you're the Super Bowl champs, and people thought you got a little lucky. The Tyree play, you know, so on and so forth. Well, maybe they're Cinderella. Now, 2008, you guys are 11-1. You win at Pittsburgh. You win at Arizona. You're beating people, and you're a really good football team. And then Plaxico Burress shoots himself in the leg, and the rest, as they say, is history. It became a big distraction and everything else. Does that piss you off more than anything else?
You know, I'm over it because of the sheer fact that I was lucky enough to get back to the Super Bowl. But do I honestly think that that was the best football team I've ever been on? No question. 2,000-yard backs in Brandon Jacobs and Derek Ward with our third alternate, Ahmad Bradshaw, who ran for, I think, 595 yards that season, to be the NFC number one seed, to beat the Carolina Panthers at home, to have the home field bye, to think that if we would have taken care of business with Plaxico against the Eagles at home, who the last time we played them, we ran for 235 yards because they couldn't play Brian Dawkins in the box because of the threat of Plaxico outside. We would have played them at home. We would have played at home against the Arizona Cardinals, who we beat in Arizona in 4-degree weather and snow, and then we would have gone on to the Super Bowl to play the Pittsburgh Steelers, who we beat in Pittsburgh that year. But these are all woulda, coulda, shouldas. It didn't happen because of what took place off of the football field, and it's very unfortunate. Number one, you know, we were all very happy and we were thankful that Plaxico was okay. He was within a centimeter of almost dying from hitting the main artery. So your first instinct is you think about your teammate, you think about your brother, and you think after him being okay after it, then, yeah, it does make you think, you know, we could have been back-to-back champs. But it's not reality. It didn't take place. It didn't happen. But like I said, at least I was fortunate enough and we were fortunate enough as a team to be able to get back there one more time so that we didn't have that lingering effect of what could we have been.
A personal question. 2003, you're drafted in the fifth round. So let's face it, fifth rounders are not guaranteed to make a team. There's no roster spot sitting there reserved for our rookie fifth round draft pick. You got to cut your teeth and you got to make it happen. You wind up being a starter your rookie year, and then you start every year for like 5 or 6 straight years before injury ended that streak. But you talked about your father earlier, and you lost your father during the preseason as you're trying to make the team. Now, you got a chance to not only make the team but be a starter. Jim Fossil was the head coach. Can you take us through what that experience was like and how you were able to keep your eye on the prize and not let it derail you?
I was able to keep my eye on the prize because my father was with me every game that season and every game of my 11-year career. Third preseason game of the year. We're playing the New York Jets at home. And
that's the big one. That's the final dress rehearsal. And they want to see what Deal's got if he's going to be a starter for us and make our team.
So we play on Saturday night, and we play at home, have an unbelievable game. I'm playing Dwayne Robertson, who was the number 4 overall pick, had awesome game, stood out, did a great job, earned the starting position as the right guard on the New York Football Giants. Walking off the field, getting to the locker room, and Coach Fossil, after he breaks up the team, he's walking around a little bit, and he comes over to me, and he says, David, he said, unbelievable job today. He's like, we're very proud of the way that you played tonight. He's like, you know, the media wants to talk to you. I said, okay. So I go to take off my shoulder pads, and he's like, no, just leave them on. I'm like, okay, I'm a rookie. I don't know any different. So I follow him. I'm walking around. And he's taking me upstairs. I'm like, okay, maybe they're doing all this stuff up there. I don't know. This is the preseason. This is my first year in the NFL. And we turn the corner towards his office, and I see my brother and my cousin standing there. And the first thing I said to him is, what are you guys doing here? And that's when they broke the news that my father, on the Friday night before the game, passed away from a heart attack. But my brother and my family, my brothers and my family, they didn't tell me because they knew how much football meant to me and they knew how much it meant to my father for me to be an accountable football player, to be a guy who would go out there each and every time with his teammates and be that driving force that no matter what the circumstances were, that the rest of my teammates could look at me knowing that I was going to be out there fighting for 4-plus quarters. So Saturday game, find out after Sunday morning, I fly back to Chicago with my brother and my cousin. The services are on Monday and Tuesday. When I go home, my mother said, I just had one of the most sincere nicest phone calls from Wellington and Ann Mara. I'm a 22-year-old rookie that's been on the Giants for less than 3 months, and already Mr. and Mrs. Mara contacted my mother to send their condolences. It showed me a lot about what the New York Giants were about. So Monday, Tuesday were the services. Wednesday morning, I fly back because we have the last preseason game, number 4, on Thursday night. So I fly back Wednesday morning, and the minute I get to the stadium, on a note on my seat, it says, "David, see Wellington Mara immediately." So I'm like, okay. So I go upstairs, and I walk into Mr. Mara's office, and he said, "David," he said, "I know how tough it is to lose a father like I lost my father, who I was very, very close to, like you were with yours. I just want to let you know from this point forward, if you need anything, my door is always open and we're your family." And that's why I never left the New York Giants, and that's why I spent my entire 11-year career there. Never was a free agent, never thought about being a free agent, because right there and then I knew this is where I was meant to be. And for 11 straight seasons after that third preseason game, from the fourth preseason game of my rookie year through my entire 11-year career of 164 games, I had my father's initials on the inside palms of my gloves, because I knew my father was with me, and I knew I was there because of the values and the way that my parents and he raised me.
Fascinating story. Thank you for sharing it with us. As we segue here at Super Bowl 50 and the media building up, more and more Hall of Famers and great players are showing up, making the rounds. You're making the rounds. It's a lot of fun. But for the guys that are at work, they're at practice right now. They had their last media obligation this morning. You're all about accountability. Whether you're a broadcaster with us with the Giants, over at Fox doing your games, you're about accountability, you're about preparation. Talk about the preparation that has gone into each of these two teams to get here and how they've left every stone unturned and how they can all rely on each other. And that's a common trait with every championship team in this sport.
It most certainly is because, like I said, this is a business trip. And you never know if you will ever, ever get this opportunity again. So last week, which was their, I guess you will say, bye week, You install everything. You have your Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah, it's not going to be as physical as a normal week would be because you want to let your body heal up. You want to make sure that your guys are fresh because you're going to have that practice when you go to site like they are now in San Francisco at whatever respected colleges that they're practicing at now. So last week was basically the same thing. You're going to install Wednesday, Thursday like you normally are. You're going to get your game plan. You're going to start breaking down film and getting everything going. But it also lets you take the time to spend with your family to iron out all of the details you need to handle, whether it's hotel rooms, tickets. You want all of those distractions out of the way before you come to the Super Bowl. I put my brother in charge. I'm like, okay, you're in charge. I'm going to tell me how many hotel rooms. This is the amount of tickets. That's it. This is what you're going to get. Give me the names, and we're going to roll. I want to get this done with. So you hammer out all that stuff. Because when you come here, you know that you have your media obligations. They had the big thing Monday night, which was the first time that they've ever had it. You have your huge media day on Tuesday. You know, today is your last, or Wednesday, yesterday, was their last media obligation, or today was, correct?
Today was.
This morning?
Thursday.
Okay, today was their last media obligation. But yesterday, Wednesday, it's time to get back into football mode mentally. You want to make this week as normal and the same way that you've handled the entire weeks coming up until this point. You want to do your routine. You want to watch film. You want to do all those things. And it's tough because you're taking buses now to practices. You're watching, trying to go down in the hotel instead of in your meeting room to watch film and do those things. You have to get yourself back into that routine. And you have to make sure that as a veteran and as a teammate, that you guys remain accountable to one another. That we had a curfew that started on that Wednesday. Monday, Tuesday, have your fun. We had curfews Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you have your normal curfew on Saturday. You want friends and family to come over? Come hang out in the lobby. Come to our hotel. Come do what you want to do. But make sure that you do everything that you possibly can so that at the end of this game, at the end of Sunday, that when you look at yourself in the mirror and you look at the brother and your teammate next to you in the eye, that you have zero regrets in your mind, that you've done everything that you possibly can to prepare yourself for this football game. Because if you walk away from this Super Bowl with regrets, it will be on your conscience for the rest of your life.
Maybe this game will come down to a last-second drive. Maybe it won't. You've been involved in a bunch of them. As we sit on the outside and watch teams run their two-minute offense, a minute 48 to go, they get the ball at the 27. They got to get downfield. They got to get a touchdown. As you watch it as a fan, and maybe even as you watch it as a broadcaster now for Fox, it's only natural that your intensity level rises, your anxiety level rises as you're sitting at home and you're anxious. Well, look at the clock. Look at the clock. What's it like, though, being on the field, playing in it? Do you guys feel as nervous and the anxiety level that everybody feels? You've been involved in them on Super Bowls. You've been involved in them on a zillion different levels. What's it like in the huddle, on the field, as the plays are happening?
I mean, it's intense. I mean, because you realize the magnitude of what you're in. I mean, you have less than 2 minutes left to win the Super Bowl. And every step, every move you make during that drive can make or break that entire thing. Offensive line-wise, we always said, no penalties, no holding calls, absolutely no sacks. You cannot give up a sack in a two-minute drill. Throws off the timing, ruins the clock, puts you back in a down and distance that you do not want to be in, and it completely takes away the momentum of your football drives. Wide receivers, don't be a showboater. Hand the ball to the official. Coach Coughlin used to always preach this, and I used to think, well, maybe. You know how many games I've seen won or lost in the NFL in two-minute drives by wide receivers throwing the ball to the official dropping, stumbling around, the ball's rolling around, 7, 8, 9 seconds come off the clock, you're trying to set up and get going. Teams lose games that way, and it's such a little, small, minute detail that people would never, ever think of. And the other thing that you think about is this is a time and an opportunity where we can make history. Not only as a football team, but, I mean, history. I mean, this is what this game's all about. I mean, I remember watching the John Elway drives and all the different things and him doing a helicopter, diving in for the Super Bowl and getting a touchdown. I mean, as a player, you never forget about those things. But once you get into the moment, once you're out on the football field, it's about discipline and it's about execution.
Is it kind of funny because we celebrated the 8-year anniversary earlier this week of Super Bowl 42 win? Is it kind of funny that one of the most defining plays in that game is a play in which I'm sure all five of you guys on the offensive line look back and like, well, it wasn't me. It wasn't me.
We blocked nobody. Well, that's what everybody's like, that what an amazing play. We're like, well, if we didn't give up some pressures here and there, that play would have never happened like that. But, number one, you're always taught block to the whistle. So, we just kept continuing to block. They didn't blow the whistle, and it was an unbelievable job of pocket presence and awareness of Eli, the way he was moving and rolling through to be able to stay free. So, you do think about that stuff. Number one, we never knew he caught it off of his helmet in that two-minute drive. We didn't know he caught it off of his helmet until after Plaxico scored the game winner. Because ball's caught. We're running down. We need to clock it. We need to get on the ball. We don't see the highlight of the play or anything. We just hear the crowd going crazy because he just caught a huge ball down the middle of the field after Eli's scrambling all over the place. So, number one, we see, as we're sitting on the bench, we see the catch. We're all like, did that really just take place in that? Because we had no idea he caught it off of his helmet. But the other thing is, that wasn't even the biggest play of the drive. The next series, we had a 4th-and-1 that we had to convert. that Brandon Jacobs got it by probably a half a yard, that we were able to continue our drive. So everybody still talks about that David Tyree catch, but if we don't convert that fourth and one after we extend, that game's over.
Yeah, I think Toomer got a bad spot on the previous play on the catch. Looked like he had it, and then it got mismarked. But you're right, Brandon Jacobs' extra effort. Then the Steve Smith play was another big play, third down catch. So, all right, let's put your analyst hat on now. You've done a bunch of Panther games over the last 2 years as a broadcaster. Denver, Peyton Manning, everyone had him left by the side of the road with all the injuries that he's dealt with. And he's not the same player that he was just a couple of years ago. You could see that his body has been battered by injury. But he healed it up, rested it up, performing, hasn't turned it over. I don't count that fumble in the AFC Championship game on him. So give me your breakdown and tell me who you think is going to win the football game.
Well, in regards to the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning, yeah, you say, oh, well, what was he during the regular season? If you watched this playoff run for the Denver Broncos, he's got legs now. He's got a live arm. That rest was probably the best thing that ever happened to him, because you can see him rolling a little bit outside the pocket, him stepping up, him delivering and driving the football. He wouldn't be able to do that if he didn't get that rest and have his legs underneath him like he does right now. And of all people that you're going to question Peyton Manning's ability to perform in an offense. I mean, that's absolutely comical to me, regardless of whether he's 39 years old or not. His ability to be able to recognize things pre-snap and put his offense in the best possible positions, I mean, that's something that you cannot quantify in any type of number because of what he's done and how he's changed the quarterbacking position in the NFL forever. And I think personally, I think that the way that the Denver Broncos have gone, I think that this is their opportunity to win the Super Bowl because of the fact that they were just here 2 years ago. You heard me talk about Michael Strahan, about what he said in front of us in 2007 after losing in 2000. Peyton Manning's been in one that he's won. He's been in one that he's lost. This team just lost 2 years ago in this game, and over 40% of this team were on that roster. I guarantee that they're going to come out with everything they have, and I felt the vibe when I've been around the Broncos this week, when I was talking to those guys, they are fully ready for this game because they've been in this situation before. They have veteran leadership, and they have players that know that each and every one of their guys are selling out because they do not want to be on the opposite side of the spectrum. Carolina Panthers, I have nothing but the utmost respect for Ron Rivera, Dave Gettleman, and that entire Panthers team from the way that they've rallied from last season when I've covered them to this season and when I announced their last game and called their last game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is an unbelievable football team. And I stress the word team because they are all accountable to one another. They rely and feed off of one another as a football team, and they play in harmony with one another. Offense, defense, special teams, the way their defense is able to create over 2+ takeaways a game, the way that Cam Newton and the offense is able to run the football, the way that special teams doesn't have any glaring issues or errors that put them out of position or make them vulnerable in any situation. So you have to give them a lot of credit. And I respect everything that they've done as a football team. I just feel that this is Peyton Manning's time to walk out on top, his swan song, get his last ring, and roll off into the Hall of Fame.
David Deal going with the Denver Broncos. All right, so here's my final question for you on this edition of the PapaCast. If you could put together a dinner where you had all the time in the world, and maybe your favorite bottle of red or your favorite beer, whatever the case might be, and you can pick four dinner guests. Could be from sports, could be politicians, could be people that are dead. Who would be the group that you'd love to put together and just pick their brain?
Well, obviously I can't use my father, so that takes him out of the equation, but he would be number one if I had that opportunity ever again. Number one, Walter Payton. sweetness. Still to this day, my favorite football player ever. And he exemplified everything that you want to be on the field and off the field. I had the opportunity to meet him when I was a child. I was 7 years old. And to see the way that he talked to me and was with all the other kids, running around throwing footballs. I mean, this is the greatest running back of all time, playing, throwing footballs with kids and not acting like he's any different than anybody else. And that's one reason why I am how I am as an NFL player and now as an analyst, because of seeing the way that he handled himself and carried himself around other people. So definitely number one, Walter Payton. Number two, you know me, I'm a huge history buff. My favorite president, Abe Lincoln. I'd love to be able to have Abe Lincoln sit down, talk about the history of this country, how he did everything, and just pick his brain. I would love to be able to do that. Three, this is a tough one, Bob. I've never been asked this. Three, I would say.
It'd be music, it'd be movies, actors.
I would say Elvis. I'm a huge Elvis guy. You know that. I've got an Elvis tattoo on me that I got TCB taking care of business every single day. I would say Elvis, just number one for his performance, the way he revolutionized music. But I want to hear his stories. You know Elvis has some amazing stories of when he was on the road, 69 comeback special. I mean, those are the things that I want to hear. So I would say that he would be number three. And then number four, I am the biggest Seinfeld guy. I've never met Jerry Seinfeld in my life. I would love to have the comedian Jerry Seinfeld there to bring that extra presence of fun, enjoyment, and to be able to make fun of myself, Walter Payton, Elvis, and Abe Lincoln. Because you know he'd be able to do it.
David, that was awesome stuff. We appreciate you sharing your story with us. And enjoy the Super Bowl this weekend. And thanks for joining us on the PapaCast.
It's my pleasure. And as always, is when I see you, Papa.
That's David Deal.
Love it when you call me Bob Papa.
David Deal on this edition of the PapaCast. Thank you.